Welcome to Conversation at the Cutting Edge with Sandra Sedgbeer on Vivid Life Radio. Sandra engages in thought-provoking conversations with the teachers, authors, scientists, and researchers working at the cutting edge where science and spirituality meet. If you're open to shifting your perceptions and expanding your awareness, pull up a chair and get ready to play in the field of possibilities. And here's Sandy.
Miss Sedgbeer, and joining me tonight to discuss the coming revolution in consciousness foretold by his unseen guides is spiritual channel, intuitive and author Paul Selig. A former faculty member of New York University, Paul Selig received his master's degree from Yale and served on the faculty for over 25 years. Today, he's a spiritual teacher, a psychic, and the author of four breakthrough works of channeled literature, which have won a growing following around the world. Paul Selig, welcome to Conversation at the Cutting Edge.
Thanks for having me.
Paul, you had a very successful career as an academic for many years. And then you had a spiritual experience in 1987 that left you clairvoyant. Mm-hmm. Was that experience the first time you became aware that you had a gift as a channel and an empath?
Well, you know, I didn't know what I don't know. I don't think at that point I knew that I was much of anything. And, you know, it really, my experience in 87, which was really the beginning of a spiritual journey that I still am on today, it's not ending, was the opening to what later came. So I had an experience. I ended up seeing little lights around people. And then I studied healing, and then I began to hear for people clairaudiently. So it was quite a passage, and the abilities that I seem to have come, you know, on an as-needed basis as I progressed in this work.
Well, you claim to be one of the foremost spiritual channels working today, and your books of channeled literature are described as breakthrough works that provide an extraordinary program for personal and planetary evolution. What makes them different than other channeled material that's been around for quite some time?
Oh, I don't know, because I don't read other stuff, you know, and I don't claim this stuff for myself. It's usually how I'm described. I suppose one of the big differences is that the books, and there are four of them now in print, are the unedited transcripts of channeling sessions. So these really aren't books that are compilations of channelings that are then refined and edited and ordered and structured. My guides really deliver the book chapter and verse, and it's been one of the rules for these texts since the very beginning, is that I can't get in there and fix things. So occasionally something will happen, like, you know, the doorbell will ring in the middle of the session, and I'll get disrupted, or I'll take exception to a teaching, and the guides that I work with will have to sort of talk me down from the roof a little bit, and those things may be in the book as interruptions. But really, it's the teaching as it comes through. So I think that that's different, perhaps. And I think the other thing is that the books are really energetic transmissions that are working directly on the reader. So people are having and reporting these things, you know, and have been since the first book came out in 2010, these sort of large, sort of energetic experiences of being worked with while they're reading the texts. You know, the guides say that the books are operating on two levels. They're the words on the page which provide context for the real experience of the book, which is the energetic transmission.
So at what point did these guides start appearing?
Well, they didn't start appearing. I think that what happened was I was volunteering at a place doing energy healing for people who had been diagnosed with life-challenging illness. I got a call to volunteer, and I volunteered. I'd only recently finished studying. And I found that when I had my hands on people, I began to hear things for them. And as they began to verify the information, I realized that I was opening up as a clairaudient. And then as a physical empath, I started to be able to feel for other people. And a lot of my work now And my private practice is actually tuning into people, and I sort of step into their field. I often begin to resemble them, and I tell them what I'm hearing as I tune into them or the people in their lives. The channeling itself began the moment I actually made myself available to sit with a group. And I was originally just sitting with a group to do energy work, and suddenly I started hearing things that were instructions. And as I continue to do this, and I sat with a group for many years in my apartment, I was doing this quietly because I did have another life in academia. At a certain point, and really not too long ago, I think maybe 2008 or so, they really began to lecture. And once the lectures started, everything changed. And I think I had just cleared out to be able to bring through a higher level of information and wasn't as resistant as I had been.
So how did you reconcile this, you know, academic career and this other life that started to emerge for you?
Well, you know, I'm a teacher. That's a big part of who I am, and my guides are teachers, and they're teaching through me. So it makes some sense that I'm doing what I'm doing in another form. I'm just teaching a subject, or they're teaching through me, and it's a subject that I'm learning as they teach it. I kept a very low profile at NYU about this work. I know that, you know, as I started to get more well-known for this in the last, 6 years or so, the students were aware. And mostly, you know, I didn't talk about it much unless they asked. And, you know, I ran a graduate program at another school where I was wide open about it, and that seemed to be okay for most people as well. So, you know, my concerns about how I would be received as one doing this were mostly ill-founded, and I think that people were far more receptive than I thought that they would be. You know, granted, I was an academic in an arts program, so had I been a math professor, there probably would have been, you know, more rigidity and a bit more skepticism. But in the arts, the idea of opening up to inspiration, I think, is a given. And I just happened to be doing it at a whole other level, where I was really taking dictation of entire books. When I lecture and when I do workshops or live streams, my guides come through and they run the entire thing. I'm just there trying to keep up with the dictation. That's really my job.
You know, reading the Book of Mastery, which is your latest book, there are times when the guides make a comment about, you know, you're interrupting, or you don't seem very happy, or you seem a bit skeptical. What's your relationship with them like?
What's my relationship with the what?
With the guides.
Guides? Well, it's a funny one. You know, I say that when I'm channeling, it's as if I'm sort of turning the wheel over of the car that is me over to the guides, and I'm climbing into the back seat of the car. And sometimes I'm very receded, and it's as if I'm lying in the back seat reading a magazine and only, you know, murkily aware, or, you know, somewhat aware of what they're talking about. I'm keeping up with the dictation, but I'm not paying it much mind. And other times when they say something, I am sort of hovering in the back seat and leaning over the front seat and saying, what the hell are you talking about? This makes no sense. And when I do that, because of this relationship, I have to, you know, they essentially either have to address it in some ways, and they'll say, you know, Paul is asking, or Paul is interrupting, or Paul is having a hard time with this. And then most times they'll stop and they'll address my concern or explain it further before moving on. Once in a while, they'll say, Paul has a question, we're not going to take it, we'll deal with it later. Or they'll just say, we're teaching now, and they'll continue. That happens in workshops fairly frequently. But you see, I'm not a spiritual teacher. I don't consider myself that, and I'm not a guru, and I don't want to be. I'm a gifted empath, I think, and I have some odd abilities that I didn't know that I had until I began to demonstrate them. And a lot of that was the clairsentience and the ability to step into people. But I'm not somebody that even necessarily believed a whole bunch in channeling before I began doing it. I accepted that it was a phenomena that people claimed, and I thought people like Jane Roberts and Edgar Cayce were probably the real deal. But I've never been a very good New Ager, and this is the last thing I think I would have chosen for myself if I were to choose some way to be in service. But it seems to be an appropriate utilization of a skill set that I bring, you know, just with my own energy system and psychic ability. But it's not a bad relationship. It's a good relationship, I think, with the guides. It's challenging for me to read for myself, you know, and so people sometimes assume that I have a direct line and I must have no questions about life. But I do get a lot of guidance about operating in the moment. My guides are very, very helpful with me in the moment. But when I say, when am I going to get a partner, I'm not going to get the answer. I might hear all of the issues that are standing in the way of my claiming something, you know, and what I need to be working with to adjust. But it's a funny relationship because, you know, they're working through me, but they're not me. And in some ways, I'm really the radio that they're playing through.
You're listening to Conversation at the Cutting Edge. I'm Sandy Sedgbeer, and I'm speaking with intuitive and spiritual channel Paul Selig about his newest book, The Book of Mastery. After the break, Paul will tell us more about the coming revolution in consciousness foretold by his guides and what they say about the nature of existence. We'll be back in a few moments. Stay tuned.
What does your vivid life look like? What does it feel like to be living a vivid life every single day? How do you start? What's the first step for you personally to make the shift that you've been seeking? Find out now. Vivid Life. It's a happier, healthier, wealthier state of being. Get there today by following us on Facebook, Twitter, or subscribing to our free inspirations in your inbox at vividlife.me.
You cannot separate who you are and what you do from how you interact with the world. Marketing was never meant to be slick and soulless. If you're looking to build your personal or business profile and platform and connect with the audience that resonates with you and your message, visit www.sandysedgbeer.com and discover what 30 years of applying the science of resonance in international publishing, marketing, and conscious business development can do for you.
You're listening to Vivid Life Radio Talk Radio that connects you to the most current, optimistic, and inspiring conversations on the planet. Get ready to be catapulted into your happiest, healthiest, and wealthiest life ever. Go to vividlife.me. That's vividlife.me for details on our previous and upcoming conversations with the world's brightest minds sharing their wisdom for happier, healthier, and wealthier lives.
Welcome back to Conversation at the Cutting Edge. I'm Sandy Sedgbeer, and I'm speaking with spiritual teacher, psychic, and author Paul Selig about his latest book, The Book of Mastery, which Deepak Chopra describes as authentic, straightforward truth, straight from the source field. Well, you have some well-known spiritual teachers endorsing your book, Deepak, Michael Bernard Beckwith. What is it about your book, do you think, that is attracting people of that ilk?
I don't know. I suppose it's truth. You know, I think truth is truth, and when you are in an encounter with truth, you can recognize it. And the guides that I work with are really just saying what they say, and I guess it's resonant for the readers. I mean, the books have gained a popularity without a lot of outside help, and this is the first time I've been fortunate enough to have, you know, somebody like, you know, Deepak or Michael Beckwith, you know, come through and sort of be in such support. So I'm grateful for that. But I think the books are speaking to age-old truths, or the guys would probably say eternal truths, because they say, you know, truth is truth, and what is true now is always true. And they're not talking about convenient truths, you know. There are lots of things that I think that we like to attach meaning to that are really, really convenient. And I think when they're teaching, they're really going well beyond that to the core of who we truly are and how we might be expressed as our divine or infinite selves, as they would say.
Do you think there's a sense of urgency, growing urgency now, for us all to wake up and really understand who we are and what's going on?
That's what I hear. That's what I get. I mean, it's our choice, truthfully. you know, we have choices here. We really do. We have choices about how we treat people, about how we interact with one another. But as long as we're operating from a belief in our own unworthiness of our true selves or the God within or the light, whatever you want to call it, it's very, very hard to endow somebody else with their inherent and intrinsic worth. So I do think it's a time. You know, the guides said, and I think their first book, I Am the Word, that we are standing in a time of reckoning. And they say that a reckoning is a facing of oneself and one's own creations. And they say whatever we've created in fear is going to have to be recreated at a higher level. And they say that the action of fear is to claim more fear. And they even say, if you look at your own lives and see every choice you ever made because you were frightened, you probably got some more fear in return. So they do say that we're at, I think, a juncture. That's my word. I don't know what word they would use, a time transition, but I think it's a time of transition. And I think we're all very aware of that. I think we could all feel it and know it in our bones.
So this coming revolution in consciousness that they speak of, mm-hmm. tell me more about that.
Well, what they say and have been saying truthfully is that we are not separate from the landscape that we exist in. You know, one of the criticisms I think of the New Age has been that it's all about us and ourselves and our needs. And the guides say, you know, you're accountable to everything that you see. If you can see it, you're in vibrational accord with it. And consequently, how you're perceiving something and how you're claiming it and naming it is actually supporting it in its own resonance. So we're living right now at a time when we're sort of, our history is all around us, what we've created previously, but what we tend to do is reclaim what we've had. Well, I had a bad day yesterday, I expect to have another bad day today, or this is how they did it yesterday, it will be done again this way today. And change doesn't happen by replicating history. It comes through aligning to a higher level of awareness, and that's what they say we're doing. So the awareness of the true self or the divine self as who and what we really are, and they've really been emphasizing the what, we are the physical manifestation of this, because unless we realize ourselves as this, it's very, very challenging to accept the divinity in everything else. And, you know, they say all is holy, everything is holy, not just the stuff that we like or would agree to or seem spiritual. If God is everything, it's in all things. They speak about the kingdom, and that's their term, as the awareness of the divine in all manifestation. And that's where they're seeking to bring us, is to an awareness of the inherent divinity in everything we see before her. So as long as we're fighting one another and condemning one another, we can't go there. But they're giving us a system, I think, of energetic attunements that really is there to support our own elevation of consciousness and awareness. And that's the work that they've been doing through me and in their books from the very beginning.
So when you talk about energetic attunements, Paul, are you mm-hmm. saying, I mean, you said earlier that some people say they actually experience shifts.
Yeah.
I'm assuming shifts in consciousness when they're reading the book. So are they actually imbuing the words with a form
yeah.
of energy?
Yeah, these aren't just, I mean, they're shifts of consciousness, but they're also very often palpable shifts in the energetic field. You feel them in your body. I mean, if people go to the reviews on Amazon for any of the books, you'll see things like, I'm reading the books and my body's vibrating, I'm reading the books and I'm seeing energy fields. I mean, it's pretty common, but the guides are working with language. They say that it's been encoded. So the encoded language is actually serving to attune. And there are attunements in almost all of the books that are very specific to what they're teaching. And once you're aligned, what they say is we're all radios. We're always in a broadcast. Our broadcast is our consciousness. And what they're doing is helping our radios to play the higher stations. They're already there. You know, we just have to attune to them. We have to attune to the higher broadcast because that really is our birthright. We just have been told we're not allowed to play or that they don't exist. So we don't. So the languaging in the books and specifically the attunements that they use, which are very intentional ways of claiming things into being, seem to have very profound effects on many of the people who are working with them.
When they speak about the kingdom, I mean, some people would take that as some kind of biblical reference. Mm-hmm. I mean, how do you differentiate between what they're talking about and religious teachings?
Well, you know, I wasn't raised with religion, so I was raised pretty much of an atheist. And the language that my guides work with is, in some ways, utilizing a vocabulary that comes from the Judeo-Christian tradition, but they seem to be sort of reappropriating it to its true meaning. There's a guy named Jeffrey Kripal, who's the head of religious studies at Rice University, who I've co-facilitated with, and he wrote the introduction to the newest book. And he says, you know, this is really like second century Christianity or Gnosticism that's being taught. So the guides do sort of unpack some of these concepts. But the idea of heaven as a place you go to when you die isn't what they're talking about at all. They're talking about the kingdom as a state of consciousness that one can attend to as the divine self. So as you align yourself vibrationally to the truth of who you are a divine being, like it or not, agree to it or not, that's who you truly are and who everybody is. As you align to that, you begin to perceive in accord with that, and you shift to a level of consciousness where that is what you can begin to perceive. So that's how they teach it.
Do they give you any information about who they are?
Well, you know, they've always said that they're teachers. You know, in the first book, they used the term ascended masters once, and I think maybe because I got uncomfortable with it, they don't use it much anymore. Some people like that, but they say, you know, some of us have been informed, some of us have not. In the newest book, which I was surprised about, they actually come through with a name that I had been given some time ago, and that's the name Melchizedek. And that's a very old name, and it's a priesthood, but that's who they say. If they say in the new book, if you want to call us something, you may call us this. The only reason they're called the guides is that my ex used to say, ask the guides this, ask the guides that. So they got to be known as the guides, not because they announced themselves. I think for the most part, the names are about convenience. And I'm pleased to a certain extent that they actually were not that public about names, because we tend to attach ego to them, you know, and I don't think that that's the point of it at all. Again, I think truth is truth no matter what form it's coming through.
Do they have a message for our listeners today?
I can go in. I should say that if I channel, and I'll see if there's something that they want to say, I whisper the words as they come and repeat them, so it sounds a little clunky, but people get used to it. I'd say this. They're saying, we would like to say this. You damn yourselves. You damn yourselves by believing yourself as inferior. By believing yourself as inferior, none of you are damned. None of you are damned. You know who you are. You know who you are in a higher level. In a higher level, always, always. This is something that's pronounced for you. This is not something that's pronounced for you. It is your inheritance. It is your inheritance. It's time to claim it. It's time to claim it when you say these words. When you say these words, I know who I am. I know who I am. I know what I am. I know what I am. I know how I serve. I know how I serve. You align to the true self. You align to the true self who seeks to express as you, who seeks to be expressed as you. I know as a divine being. I know who I am as a divine being, what I am in form as this, what I am in form as this, and how each of you serves, and how each of you serves, how you must work to fully express, is how you are most perfectly, perfectly expressed as this vibration, as this vibration, as the true self that you are, as the true self that you are. It is time to start claiming it. It is time to start claiming it as your inheritance. It is your inheritance. You have a right to know. You have a right to know and to be in agreement with your own divine worth, with your own divine worth, period, period, period. And they're saying period, period, period.
You know, I've noticed... I'm going to say in the book that again and again and again they say, we're kind of asked to read the words, I know who I am, I know who I am. And clearly that seems to be some kind of statement, some kind of powerful
statement. It's a claim of truth. They call it a claim of truth. And they say when something is true, it is always true. So people come to me and I say, well, I don't know who I am. But you see, who makes this claim is the divine self. So it's the true self or the infinite self, or the guides use the term the Christed self, saying this. I know who I am. I know what I am. I know how I serve the divine self as you announces this. So they say on a higher level, this is always true. And in the claim of it, you align to it. And there's often an energy that accompanies it. So when we do this in workshops, people can really feel it. I mean, it's pretty amazing to feel a room full of people sort of anchor in this level of vibration. But they actually have said that this claim calls us into present time, which is the only time that we can know anything. Most of the time, we're just sort of doing what we've always done or acting, you know, in projection of the future. But you can only know in the current moment, and knowing who you truly are is what they're trying to bring us to.
Paul, before we wrap up the show, I think you've got a couple of events coming up. Would you like to briefly tell our listeners about them?
Well, I have an active calendar. I do live streams on Wednesday nights where my guides lecture and take questions. And all of the information on this is on my website, which is just my name, Paul Selig, SELIG.com. And I'm doing workshops all over the country. I'll be in New York City this Saturday. I'll be in Annapolis, Maryland. In 2 weeks, I'll be at the Esalen Institute in Big Sur for a weekend, and then a five-day workshop in the middle of March. So I'm all over, and if you're interested, come and see what the work is about. But it's paulselig.com is how to find what I'm doing.
Paul Selig, thank you for being with us today.
Thank you for having me.
Paul Selig's book, The Book of Mastery, is published by Culture Penguin. And again, Paul Selig, SELIG.com. Excuse me. That brings us to the end of this show. We'd love to know what your Vivid Life looks like, and you can share your answers with us on the Vivid Life Facebook page. If you'd like advance information about future guests on this show, you can sign up for my newsletter at sedgebeer.com. I'm Sandy Sedgbeer. Thanks for joining me today, and I look forward to having your company at the same time next week. Till then, it's goodbye from me.
Thank you for listening to Conversation at the Cutting Edge on Vivid Life Radio, helping you discover more of who you are so you can live more of the life you were born to live. Join us same time next week for another Conversation at the Cutting Edge.
What does your vivid life look like? What does it feel like to be living a vivid life every single day? How do you start? What's the first step for you personally to make the shift that you've been seeking? Find out now. Vivid Life. It's a happier, healthier, wealthier state of being. Get there today by following us on Facebook, Twitter, or subscribing to our free inspirations in your inbox at vividlife.me.